We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Gymnastics is power and grace. As a wrestler, grappler, I can appreciate both of these, but even more the drama of striving for the perfect performance. In combat sports, you're facing another guy, so all you have to do is just perform better than them for a few minutes. In gymnastics, you're facing a tougher opponent, yourself. My guest today is Fred Turhoff, head coach of men's gymnastics at Temple University, one of 16 D1 college gymnastics programs, men's gymnastics. Fred is in the U.S. Gymnastics Hall of Fame as a coach. He's now coaching his 38th season, leading the team to be conference champions 18 of those years. Almost 50%, as Fred said. You're a Philadelphia native. When and how did you start gymnastics?
When I was in elementary school, there was a tumbling club that I took part in fourth grade. I also used to tumble on the lawns. I grew up in West Oak Lane, and every house had a lawn with a little ramp. And of course, we would roll down the ramps, and just kids in the neighborhood would get together and tumble. When I saw there was a tumbling club at my elementary school, I joined it. And then when we took a tour of the junior high that we were going to go to, we went through the gym and a couple of the gymnasts were working out, and I saw that stuff and thought, I want to try that. And so I joined the gym team in seventh grade, which is much later than most kids start gymnastics these days. But that's when I got started. And as soon as I went into that practice, I just thought, this is a lot of fun. It's a good challenge, and it's what I want to do. And I just wound up spending as much time as I could doing gymnastics. I moved out of Philadelphia, unfortunately for gymnastics, in ninth grade because my mother died and my father remarried and moved us to Stamford, Connecticut. And in Connecticut, there wasn't much organized gymnastics, but the high school I went to was a brand new high school, and one of the coaches there wanted to start a gym team. And so together we got things going, and we wound up competing against mainly teams from New York and Westchester County for a while because Connecticut was not so organized with gymnastics. However, by the time I graduated, there were two state championships in my junior and senior year, which I won. And knowing Temple had good gymnastics and knowing I wanted to study physics and they had a good physics department, I came back here.
That's an interesting combination.
Yeah, physics, science was always fascinating to me. As a kid, I collected everything and studied everything and went down to the Franklin Institute and the Academy of Natural Sciences, and physics took my interest, so I wound up being here.
Beautiful. So what, if you could take a small step back, can you generally describe for a male gymnast coming up through the system in the United States, what is, how does it start usually these days? Like, what is high school gymnastics? What is college gymnastics? Where does that fit into if you want to make a run at nationals and worlds and Olympics?
Sure. Well, it's very different now than when I was in school because, sadly, many after-school programs in public education are gone. When I was in school in Philadelphia as a young kid, every junior high and every high school had a gym team. Gymnastics left the public school system entirely probably 5 or so years ago. And so the void was filled by private clubs.
Do you know what the reasoning for that is? Why the departure from the public system?
Well, I think it's the same as has caused art programs and music funding. Programs and other sports. It's all funding. It's all a matter of money. And they looked at the after-school programs as something they could sacrifice to maintain at least the academic portion, which is very sad because it kept so many kids off the streets and gave them something to do and gave them useful activities to do. You know, if I could wave my magic wand, I'd fund the school system much more and have them bring back all these after-school activities so that the kids are occupied and learn something worthwhile instead of going out and running around. So now to get back to the original question, these days the private club system furnishes the bulk of athletes that go on to our Junior Olympic program and our national team. There are still some states that have active high school gymnastics. Massachusetts and New York are two of them in our area. Illinois and Texas out further and so on. But Pennsylvania and New Jersey no longer have scholastic programs in gymnastics. However, there are lots of private clubs. And the problem with private clubs, of course, is that you have to be able to afford them. So it cuts out a good portion of the population that would normally take part in after-school activities, and therefore it misses a lot of the talent. Yet, plenty of talent exists in the private club system. And so kids can start in private clubs, of course, as early as maybe two or three in mommy and me classes, that sort of thing.
2 or 3 years old?
Well, they're not, they're not really doing gymnastics per se. They're just doing movement exploration. But the clubs, of course, have to make money, and so they come up with a variety of offerings. And you have gymnastics for tots, where they just get to play on apparatus and see what it's like to roll around and be upside down. And those who take a liking to it will then perhaps join an instructional class where they start learning some of the fundamentals of gymnastics. In the boys' gymnastics program, we have 7 current competitive levels, going from level 3 to level 10. Level 3 is such easy stuff that most everybody can learn it if you have some coordination and some strength. And that's one of the things that gymnastics will teach you a lot. You have to eventually be quite strong, you have to be flexible, and you have to be coordinated. And so if you start in the level 3 program, which is the very beginning, where you're just starting to learn routines and then you get proficient at them, you can move up into the level 4, which is where you start competing against other kids in your area. And level 4 competition can go up to a state level. And so you could be a state champion in level 4. When you get to level 5, 6, and 7, I should mention that these early levels are all compulsory routines. Those are routines that are written up. The kids have to do those routines. Okay. That differs from optional routines. By the time you're an optional gymnast, you have a pretty good repertoire of skills and you're starting to learn some of the harder things. And you put together your own routines. But for the first 4 competitive levels, 4, 5, 6, 7, you're doing compulsory routines. Now, of course, each one gets a little harder, and each one you're expected to be a little older.
But that's nice because the difficulty is then fixed. So all you have to do is to not screw up.
That's right. You have to perform your skills better than somebody else does. And, of course, there are certain minimum performance values, and then you can exceed them and get bonus points because you did them so well. So level 4, stop at state. Level 5s and 6s and 7s can go to a regional championship, which would be, in our case, 8 states. And then if you are an optional gymnast, you can now go to a national championship. And by that time, you're a pretty good gymnast. You have a pretty good control of basic skills, and now you're starting to learn some of the harder stuff. The older boys in level 10, of course, are the ones that are then going to be probably trying to get to a collegiate program where they can continue their training. There are 17 programs in the country, including one Division III at Springfield. So there aren't that many varsity programs. However, there are an awful lot of club programs at colleges as well. So there are outlets for kids who want to compete in college, even if they aren't good enough to make a varsity team. So there are at least 40, and I know that there are 2 separate competitions that are national in scope that kids and clubs can go into.
When you were coming up, and maybe when these kids are coming up, is there the dream of the Olympics? Is that a possibility? You know, I'm not completely aware of our history in men's gymnastics. I know that there is a gold medal in all around recently, 2004. But correct. Other than that,
well, we've had some sporadic success prior to the decade of the 2000s. In 1979, our men's team was 3rd at the World Championship, and I had the privilege of being an assistant coach on that team. 1984, we won the Olympic gold medal and had a variety of medalists from that. In 1978, we had our first male world champion at the world meet, which was held in Strasbourg, France. That was Kurt Thomas. And in 1976, prior to that, Peter Korman was bronze on floor at the Montreal Olympics. So that got things started for men's gymnastics. Then there was a time where we foundered a bit, and then we got into the 90s and started having some individual successes. Like Trent Demas won horizontal bar at the 92 Olympics. And I was very proud to have a gymnast on the 92 Olympic team, Dominic Minicucci. The Temple Owl represented the United States there, and I was over as a part of the coaching staff. So that was neat. But then when we got to the end of the 1990s, starting 2001, for 4 years in a row, the U.S. men were second in the world in either world or Olympic competition. And, of course, the culminating individual events in terms of accomplishment were Paul Hamm winning the world all-around title in 2003 and then winning the Olympic all-around title in 2004. And we had a number of other people who were prominent. It started back in 2001. One of our gymnasts was the world parallel bar champion. Mm-hmm. And then we had finalists in a variety of events. Paul, in addition to winning the world all-around title in 2003, tied for floor exercise in that meet. And then further on down the road, we had had more successes. You know, certainly with John Horton being an Olympic medalist on horizontal bar in 2008. Most recently, the World Championship held this past October in Antwerp, Belgium. Mm-hmm. We had four different guys win medals in the event finals. And our best all-around man unfortunately missed his last event in the all-around meet, and so dropped from second or third down to sixth all-around, but still finishing sixth all-around the world was pretty good. Great. I'm sure he's going to learn from that. He's terrific.
Now, who's this you're talking about?
His name was Sam Mikulik.
Yeah, I saw him. Okay, yeah. He has a lot of promise. He's only 21.
Yeah, right? He's at Michigan. He's a senior this year.
So he's another...
Michigan. He's a two-time NCAA all-around champion. He was our U.S. champion last year, and he wound up being in the top of the world.
Going back to the kind of the system of high school and college, he is a example of a guy who is a product of the college system.
College system. Prior to that, he was a product of the Junior Olympic system because he was the Junior Olympic national champion 4 years ago. And he trained at the SCATS program, which is in California, Huntington Beach, California.
So as a Philadelphia native and Temple University gymnast yourself, as you said, and then coach, assistant coach, and then head coach, you and your team were hit with tragic news last month that Temple University is eliminating seven sports. One of these sports is men's gymnastics. When you started, there were 138 varsity gymnastics teams.
Yeah, that's correct.
And today there's only 17. Michigan State was dropped in 2001. It was ranked third in the nation. So the story seems to be complicated. It's much like the story from my own discipline of wrestling. I'm not sure if you're aware, it was dropped from the Olympics this year.
Yeah, I am aware of that. I have a soft spot in my heart for wrestling because I wrestled in high school. We didn't have enough time for gymnastic training, so I went out for wrestling as well.
It's the closest closest thing, I think.
No, it kept me in great shape.
Yeah. So the cut takes effect for men's gymnastics on June 30th, 2014. So you guys have a season coming up. As the cut in general is affecting 150 athletes, nine coaches. It was following a seven-month analysis and recommendation made by the new director of athletics. And then the board of trustees and the president made the decision. What, from my perspective, it seems behind closed doors. They made an announcement officially based on four factors: student athlete welfare, financial commitments, facilities, and Title IX compliance. Can you talk about the announcement, how you heard about it, you know, the day you heard about it, how you felt?
Certainly. A number of us coaches, I assumed it was all coaches, got an email saying that we were to have our athletes at a mandatory meeting at 1:45 in the indoor football facility that used to be the student pavilion. And that I had a personal meeting with the athletic director earlier that day. So my meeting was set for 1:05. Now, all of us got these notices the day before. So, of course, I passed the notice on to my athletes, not knowing what was going on. And no coaches that I spoke to know what was going on. We were all in the dark. So when I went in to the meeting with the athletic director, And the deputy athletic director was there as well. And shortly after, the development officer came in as well. But neither of those latter two said anything. The AD explained that he had done this analysis and he was going to drop Seven Sports. And we were one of them. I asked if I had any recourse, because when this happened 19 years ago, the AD made the decision 11 days prior to the board meeting.
This happened before Temple University.
In 1994, the announcement was made in late November or early December, I can't recall without looking it up, that they were going to drop baseball and men's and women's gymnastics. So we had the opportunity there to muster our forces, get a lot of feedback. The media, of course, took our side. We were able to arrange to make a presentation to the Board of Trustees because there had been so much feedback. And during that presentation, at least for my part, I tried to show that the reasons the athletic director at the time used for cutting our program weren't quite true. He talked about regaining use of a facility. Well, our facility isn't strictly gymnastics. It's used by martial arts. It's used by cheerleading. It's used by dance. And it's used by the kinesiology department for classes. So that didn't hold water. In terms of saving money, I have more people paying to come to Temple than the cost of my program, currently and then.
So not all your athletes are on scholarship?
No, I am allowed 4 scholarships, which I can break up anyway. But I haven't given them all out this year. Last year, let's say I gave them all out. Last year, I had 21 on my team. That meant 17 paid to come here. This year, if I had given out all 4 scholarships, 15 would be paying to come here. Now, 15 tuitions is more than the cost of my program. So we really have no net cost to the university. Plus, we're all required to do fundraising, at least the coaches I deal with. My requirement last year and this year is to raise $29,000 of my operating budget. I was successful last year in raising nearly $59,000. So it was the best fundraising year I had. So I was able to cover what I was required to do, plus extra costs because we made sure we had a spring break trip, I should say, and I was able to put some money away in the endowment that we started long ago. Now, I don't feel successful in terms of the endowment because it hasn't gotten anywhere near where I want it to be, but at least it's $71,000 that has been put away to help men's gymnastics. We have an additional endowment for extracollegiate activity because I have guys that train in the U.S. program. And that's about $26,000. So we get some interest from that helps support our budget. But still, when you look at the number of kids coming here for gymnastics who are then paying all their way, the total coming in is more than the cost of my program, which is about $280,000 if I give all the scholarships out.
In terms of academics, Temple last year had the highest team GPA.
The last 3 years, we've had the highest GPA. Then we had an off year, maybe. And then the past 5 years, we've had the highest GPA 4 of those years. Yeah. 3 years ago, we had the highest GPA of all gymnastic teams in the country. And in the past, then the year after that, we were second. And this past year, we were third. So we're still amongst the top grade point averages of all the teams.
There's something called APR.
Academic progress rate.
Progress rate.
We have 1,000 academic progress rate, which means we graduate all the kids that come in on financial aid that I give them.
So that's based on the graduation rates and academic standards.
Yeah. And we were noticed, it was singled out by the NCAA that we had an excellent academic progress rate and excellent graduation rate. And that was the one remark I made to the athletic director at the end of our brief meeting, was that I just said, you realize your APR is going to drop now. And he just kind of nodded. But that was to let him know that if you get rid of the programs that are doing well academically, the department's going to suffer. And we certainly are one of them. And so then right after that, I just walked over to the student pavilion where I saw other students, and I thought everybody was going to be there, but it was only seven teams. And of course, having just been told my program was dropped, I thought, oh, these are the seven teams.
Yeah.
And the athletic director walked in and stood at the end of the building on a microphone and announced that he was going to be dropping the seven sports. And of course, there was a hush in the crowd and then some sobbing.
Yeah, I heard
some
crying.
And then he walked out. Yeah. And I understand that either he or someone else met with the teams that were being retained in our arena. And they were told that the seven sports were being dropped and that it would be to their benefit because the money saved would be used to enhance their programs.
Right.
It was a pretty cutthroat corporate type of act.
So the communication was very minimal.
Yeah. No. One of my complaints is that nobody engaged us coaches. Certainly nobody engaged me to say, hey, look, I've got this problem. I've got a financial problem. What can we do to help this? If I look at the four reasons that they give, in terms of finances, I already pointed out that we pay for ourselves.
Right.
And we raise money. In terms of facility, although my facility here is not an ideal facility by any means, when you compare it to the best schools, it doesn't stand up well. But we've been successful. And we make do with what we have. We've been funded, according to a previous athletic director, we've been funded to compete well regionally. Well, I think 18 of 37 conference championships is competing very well regionally.
Very well, yeah.
Plus, in the time I've been here, or let's say since the last attempt to drop us, we've had four NCAA champions. We've had a number of national team members. And U.S. champions. And so we've brought plenty of honor to Temple. And so now going back again to the four reasons. So you have funding, which I think I pointed out, we don't cost them anything to start with and raise money. Facilities we're okay on. Title IX, if you look at the number of Title IX, if you look at Title IX, it's got three prongs. Title IX is for equality. Temple's student population is 51% women, 49% men. And so they expect to have 51% opportunities for women, 49% for men. Right now, or as of last year, which is the most recent figure I could get on, it was 51% men, 49% women. So it's pretty close, and it's been improved. So just the fact we're making improvement and progress toward equality or representation, equal representation, then Temple is Title IX compliant. Sure, they should try to spend as much money on the women as men. I don't know for sure if that's a written factor in it. If you accommodate the interests of the underrepresented sex, you also are
right.
Take care of Title IX. And the only way you know that is to do a survey. Survey all the women and the men, all the women, let's say, if they're underrepresented, and say, how many of you would take part in intercollegiate athletics? But you have to do that survey. So I don't see how Title IX...
So the biggest problem is you are not given a chance to defend the program.
I couldn't defend the program at all and point out not only that we've done well academically and athletically, but we provide a service to our community. We have a Sunday clinic that we've run since 1982 where local youth come in and learn gymnastics. And that's run during the regular semesters. The kids on the team are volunteer teachers for that. And we use it as a fundraiser. We also have a boys team here that we began 11 years ago when two local boys teams closed down. And when the gym next door was changed in terms of its use, we used to have racquetball classes, or not classes, racquetball recreation there at night. They stopped doing that. So we could leave apparatus out at the end of practice and have kids come in and train. So we started that program, and it's 11 years strong now. We also sponsor a very big boys meet in mid-February, usually on President's Weekend. I have a home meet as part of that. And we have 500 boys that come through the university. So there's a promotion for the university that they're not paying for. And some of these kids wind up being Temple students. And of course, they get to see our facility, and maybe once or twice a year, one of those kids says, I'd like to be on the gym team. So we have that opportunity as well.
But I'm guessing some of these factors were not, most of these factors were not considered. It was just a sweeping business decision, a quick one.
As far as I can see, those factors weren't considered at all. And so this is the thrust of my work right now. What I'm trying to do is influence those that I can to say, you're not just getting rid of a gym team and you're not saving this much money. You're getting rid of community programs. You're getting rid of a program that has brought honor to the university at little cost and has satisfied everything that intercollegiate athletics should be, mm-hmm. provided opportunities, graduated its participants, mm-hmm. and had success.
The Berkeley program I saw a couple years ago was also eliminated, and then they had to, in a similar fashion, they raised some funds and were able to be reinstated.
Yes, Berkeley, gymnastics and other sports. They initially were told, you're done. But then there was enough outcry, which I hope is continuing right now for us. And then they were told, well, if you raise this much money. And so
they didn't tell you any such thing, right?
No, we haven't had that opportunity yet. I'm hoping that the result of the backlash that the university is getting now from newspapers, from alumni, from fans, is giving them second thought that, well, maybe there's more here than we considered.
Right.
I would welcome the opportunity to sit down with the administration and say, what is it that you want me to raise to make it so that we can stay as a varsity program? If I'm given a goal, then I can start working on it. So far, the only goal I've had is mine, where I want to get my endowment big enough so that the university doesn't pay for the program, even though in essence it doesn't, since we bring in more tuition money than that.
Actually, people can go on templegymnastics.com, and there's a lot of things you can do. Like, I signed the petition. I don't know if that helps, but...
Well, the fact that there are 12,700 plus signatories already, that certainly gives me good feeling that there are that many people that care about our sport.
You also suggested to write to the Board of Trustees, and there's...
Yeah, I think the more feedback that the president and the Board of Trustees gets will let them know that there is interest in our program, or and perhaps in the other programs that they should consider. Certainly, gymnastics is the... We're gymnastics in Philadelphia because Penn has women's gymnastics, but there's only men's gymnastics at Temple University, and the next closest place is West Point or Penn State or Annapolis. There's no college gymnastics in New Jersey.
Right.
And any time that USA Gymnastics wants to bring an event here, they do it with our cooperation.
Right.
We hosted the 2001 U.S. Championship. We hosted the 2006 American Cup on Temple's grounds. Mm-hmm. We helped with the 2008 Olympic trials that were held down at the, it's now called the Western Union Center. At that time, I think it was the Wachovia Center. But still, they did that knowing that we were here and my organization would be able to help them with running that. Now, if we're not here anymore, I don't think Philadelphia is going to be as attractive a site to bring in those sorts of events.
These are all factors that would be part of a great presentation, much like wrestling got a chance to defend. Your son is actually a student at Temple and a member of the gymnastics team this year. Is he a second year?
He's a sophomore, yes. And he competed in every meet last year on rings.
What was the conversation like with him after the announcement?
It was a very teary conversation, of course. I did my best to calm him down. And this, I said to the team right away when the athletic director left the room after making the announcement, I said, remember, you have finals coming up. This was done Friday right before final exam, so I'm sure it affected some of them in terms of their studies. I'm sure it affected some of all the athletes in terms of their studies. But I said, you still have finals to go. We still have a season. We still have a team.
Right.
So we're going to train to do as best we can. And you're going to study to do as best you can. And we'll be working on it.
I know there's an ESPN magazine article called The Losses of Dan Gable that talks about he's another longtime coach.
Oh, I know Dan. Yeah, I know.
You know, there's a certain feeling when you announce that wrestling is being taken out of the Olympics of helplessness, because there's a feeling like it was a decision made behind closed doors by a kind of bureaucracy that you don't have a good feel, you don't have a good communication with and connection to. Do you have now the same feeling of helplessness? What's the feeling like?
No, the feeling is one of a struggle. I'm doing my best to educate administrators and the public as to the value of Temple, of gymnastics, men's gymnastics to Temple, and the whole gymnastics program. Since we're kind of an island in this portion of Pennsylvania,
right.
The fact that we have done everything that you would want an athletic team to do should speak to the worth of keeping us in the program. It's just beyond me that they would pick on men's gymnastics, knowing what we've done recently. You take your best team academically, your most successful team in conference accolades, and a team that has national recognition, and you're going to get rid of that? Why would that come in? Who is thinking about that?
Same with wrestling, one of the oldest sports in the Olympics.
I agree. The Olympic sports have taken a big hit in the past 30 years. And it's very sad. Swimming, wrestling, gymnastics, we've all lost countless numbers of programs. The fact that there are so few now compared to when I started coaching, it makes me sad that economic decisions are made that eliminate the opportunities for men's gymnastics and wrestling and swimming and track and field. Whereas I'd much rather see creative financing, education, perhaps reduction in scope, but keeping the sports, that sort of thing. That would be much nicer.
Eliminating a sport is a simple, I think, business decision that that can be made when you don't see the value of the tradition and the value of the sport. Absolutely. It's something that should hopefully will remain part of Temple. Hopefully there'll be enough outcry that the administration at least gives you a chance to defend the program publicly.
I'm certainly hoping. I look forward to an opportunity to speak with some of the administrators and if I get the chance, I think I can at least put forth these same arguments and let them think a little bit about the decision. I have no problem if they go back and say, no, we were too hasty on this. Let's talk about it again. I want them to do that.
Right.
And if I get the right ears, then perhaps, at least with my sport, I think I have pretty good arguments as to why Temple ought to retain us. I'd like to see all the sports retained. I'd like to see more alumni giving back, but that's not my area. I'm a coach. I'm not a fundraiser, even though I've had some success at it, but I'm a coach, and I'm proud of that.
Same with Dan Gable. You're put in a difficult position. He's a good athlete and a good coach.
He's a great athlete. Not a good athlete. Dan was great.
Great. He had to take the role of saving a sport he loves, and you're put in a similar position. I put up a video of Brandon Wynn, I think, doing a Maltese on the floor.
Well, Brandon was third at the World Championship on rings.
So he's a rings, Lord of the Rings.
He is. He was almost the Supreme Lord, but the guys who beat him were also terrific. I mean,
he's incredible to watch. For people that don't know gymnastics, he's incredible to watch because just the display of strength and power is really cool. Do you think you can summarize for me the events for men's artistic gymnastics?
Certainly. We have six competitive events. Floor exercise is performed on a 12 by 12 meter floor. It's just a little under 40 by 40 feet. And you have to perform tumbling skills on the floor as well. tumbling skills are forward, backwards, or sideways, and they involve generally flips and twists. And so the more flips and twists you see, you know, the harder the routine is. Plus, some of the skills on the floor involve strength holds. And with all gymnastic events except for vault, your routine has to have at least 10 parts, and there are certain requirements that you have to fulfill. So if you fulfill all the requirements, then the judge who's evaluating your routine will add up the highest 10 values that you do. And there are certain limitations on what you can do, but in essence, he picks the highest 10 skills, adds up the value of those, and those moves are all rated from A to G. A is the easiest. G is a real hard skill. And they're rated simply 1/10, 2/10, 3/10, all the way up to 7/10. So as an example, a handstand on the floor is an A skill. Handstand is the basic move of gymnastics. If you do a triple back somersault on floor, that's a G. That's
triple
back somersault. That's turning over three times from your feet and landing on your feet again.
Yeah. Has that ever been done?
Yes, that's been done. In fact, a fellow named Valerie Lukin did it in 1987. He was the first one. And it's been done by a handful, not many, because it's that hard. But there's an example of a G skill, really tough on floor. On pommel horse, the exercise is quite different because you have to keep your body in motion the entire time, and most of the routine is done with your legs together swinging what's called double leg circles. But while you're doing these circles with your body, you have to travel up and down the horse. You have to turn around different ways. You have to spend time on one pommel. And there's a requirement of a scissor skill. That's where you, instead of doing circular stuff, you do pendular work, where you go up and your legs cross over the horse, and the best people go to a handstand. And again, there's 10 moves that have to be counted.
Now, that one is one of the more dramatic ones. I've been watching a lot of gymnastics lately, and I think at first, I don't do gymnastics myself, so it's hard to understand why it's difficult, but that's the pommel horse seems to be the one that breaks a lot of people.
Pommel horse is the most difficult for men. The reason is the margin of error is very small. You're in constant motion, and if you lean a little bit too far one way or the other, off you go. Right. You come right off. And the fact that you don't get a chance to rest makes it all the tougher.
It's incredibly hard on your body. Yeah.
It's tough on your wrists, generally. Pommel horse and your shins, because we hit our shins on the horse and the pommels a lot when you're learning. When you move to rings, that's where you're known for strength. But you also have to be able to swing to a handstand, and you have to be able to do a good dismount. But strength is the predominant skill there, and it's strength hold positions. So probably the best known ring strength is a cross. Well, that's a B skill, which means it's a little difficult. It's just medium. A cross, just hanging with your arms straight out, is a B skill. When you turn upside down, that's a C skill. And I think that's a bad rating. I think it's harder than that. But
and upside down, you hold it?
When you hold it upside down with your arms to the position, side, yeah. That's called an inverted cross. Yeah. And there are a variety of hold positions that are equally or just as hard. Equally as hard or harder.
Is there harder hold positions than?
Yes. Yes. The hardest single hold position I know of is if pretend you're lying on your back on the ground and put your arms out about 45 degrees in your body. Mm-hmm. Now, if you can do that with your hands on the rings, holding your body out like that, the local term is a Victorian, but that's done by very few people.
I haven't
and
seen that,
it's,
actually.
It's, yeah, that's you haven't seen it. That's because it's that hard. Just a few guys do that. So rings involves strength, holds, swinging to strength, swinging to a handstand, and doing a fancy dismount that involves flips and twists. When we get to vault, that's the different event. There you run down a runway, 25 meters maximum, jump onto a board that's got springs in it. Then you can touch the horse only once. I call it the horse. It's now called a table. Touch the table. And then the best people are going to do two or three flips from the board to their feet again and involve twisting. And that's a very fast event. Boom. So you're judged there on the pre-flight on from the board to the horse and the after-flight, and you have to show significant rise. You have to show good control on the landing. You have to land within a certain alleyway that's marked out on the mats.
And this is points-wise, Is it also 16 points like the other ones? Or
well, if you score a 16 in vault, you're doing a great vault. The vaults are all valued. And a 16 vault is a very hard vault to do. On all the other events, anybody who will score a 16 has done a terrific job. Because if you have, let's just think of this. If you have all D skills, if you have 10 D skills, so that's 10 very hard skills, that's, and each one is worth 4/10, that's 4 points. Mm-hmm. The combination, the event requirements are 2.5 points. Mm-hmm. And the execution is 10 points. Mm-hmm. So now your maximum score you could do if you did it perfect is 16.5. So the guys that'll score close to 16 have more difficult routines. They can start in the 17s.
Yeah.
The highest value I can remember seeing in competition, I believe, at least in this last world championship, was probably a 7-4. Mm-hmm. 7-4 on floor exercise, and I think a 7-7. Meaning the maximum score would be 17-4 or 17-7 on horizontal bar. I mean, those are terrific. We still have two more events, parallel bars and horizontal bar.
Right.
On parallel bars, you have to do moves in a support with your arms straight on top of the bars. You have to do moves in an upper arm support where your upper arms are on the bars. You have to do moves below the bars where you're turned over and where you go through a long hang. And when most people, when they do a long hang, they have to bend their knees. And that's the only time you're allowed to bend your knees is when you swing through the bottom. And so you have to show changes of direction, releases, and you can show holds if you want, plus a very hard dismount. That's parallel bars. And then horizontal bar is another event where you don't get to rest. You're constantly going. But here is where you have to let go, fly, and catch the bar again. And people do this with a double somersault with a full twist now. So you can imagine the
double
time.
Double somersault with a full twist.
If you flip over the bar.
Is that a G technique? Is that
if it is done with a straight body with a full twist, then you get an F skill for it.
Wow.
Yeah. And if you add a little bit more, then it becomes a G. If you do a triple back off horizontal bar, that's an E skill. So that's not as tough. But the interesting thing is on horizontal bar, as in floor exercise, if you put hard skills together, you get a little bonus. You get what's called a combination bonus.
Or like one right after the
other. So the best guys you'll see doing 2 and 3 release moves right in a row.
Right.
Now, you can imagine the precision you need doing the first one and being able to set up and go right for the second one without any intermediate giant swings.
Yeah.
And horizontal bar, you have to show turns. You have to show skills with your grip in a funny position, unusual position, or your back to the bar. You have to show flight on release moves and a big flippy dismount with lots of twists and a good stuck landing.
For your guys and in general, when you were competing, how do you develop a routine? How do you make the decision of what difficulty level techniques to do?
Well, I have to assess the value, the difficulty level of each of my gymnasts. And I do that just by observing. And they try to show me their best stuff.
But do you take risks? I mean, is there, in the practice room, are you hitting these techniques perfect?
Not for a long time. Not for a long time. To master any advanced skill, there's a progression that you do. There are a number of steps you do to get there. And if you skip steps, then it can get to be dangerous. But still, you can't program your body to do the same thing every time.
Right.
So there is a little margin that you try to perform in. But when I teach, for instance, if I teach someone to do the move on horizontal bar where you flip over the bar, it's called, the international term is a Kovac, named after a Hungarian gymnast who did it first. It's a back flip over the bar and recatch. Right. Well, there's a whole series of steps I'll have him do beforehand, before he gets to flip, where he has to learn where to let go so he's going to land in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have safety devices. I hold them up in an overhead spotting belt. We have pads we slide on the bar so that if they do make a mistake, they hit something soft instead of the hard horizontal bar. And then when it's time for them to go, I still keep them in a belt. And my rule of thumb is if you catch it 5 times in a row or just about, then you're probably safe. So that's when the belt comes off. But we still slide the mats in and we still make sure that in case of an error, they're going to hit something softer. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about years of training.
so how do you start from the A technique of a handstand to what's the process like? I mean, you know, in the grappling sports, there's just you take a technique and you drill it thousands of times.
Yeah.
Is it possible to drill things in gymnastics in a similar way?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. But you can't leave your basics go. When you learn them, it doesn't mean you've learned them for good. You still have to practice them. And so generally, that's what you do in a warm-up turn. You take a swing. You do certain things that get you ready for the feel of the apparatus that's coming up. But you're always trying to do your basic skills well. It's silly to be doing hard stuff and then losing points because you're performing basics poorly. So we always try to look for good performance of the basic skills. And each apparatus has its own basic skills. And then when we start evaluating the abilities of a guy, and there might be one guy who's better at flipping than others. Another guy's better at twisting than others. And there are some that are good at both. And then, of course, there are some that are not good at any of them. So then you're searching for things to teach them. Often I ask them, what do you want to learn? I always have a meeting at the beginning of the year, individually with each one. What do you want to learn this year? Let's set some goals out. We write the goals down. And then we have a meeting at the end of the year to see whether we were realistic.
Do most guys like to specialize in one event?
No, most guys do more than one event. Very few guys do only one event. In the junior program, they're pretty much all taught all-around gymnastics, which means all the apparatus. When they come to college, they don't have to be all-around gymnasts. And internationally, since 1992, you didn't have to be an all-around gymnast. Mm-hmm. But that's the most coveted individual title if you're good at everything. So I encourage them to work all around, but I certainly have a place on my team for those who work fewer events. And that just means they're going to put twice as much time on an event than they would have normally because they get two chances to go to the event instead of one.
Right. Now, how big is the mental aspect part of it? Like you look at somebody you mentioned, Sam Mikulik. You know, I watched him at a few events. He looks, there's like no sign of nerves.
I can tell you that even the best guys get a little nervous. But you have to be tough enough mentally so that you say, I've done this so many times already. There's very little chance I'm going to miss. And if you're well-trained, you've thought through routines and you've thought of what you might do in case this goes wrong, in case that goes wrong. I know that in my own case, I had plans so that if something went wrong, I had a cover. Mm-hmm. And that usually worked. Not always.
There's a certain kind of pressure where you look at a sport like that I also like watching, Olympic weightlifting.
Yeah.
You get three attempts. So in gymnastics, from what I can tell, you really only get one attempt.
It's one attempt, yeah.
So comebacks seem to be rare, really.
Well, you look at Paul Hamm in 2004. Right, he missed vault, yeah. Right? And had he landed that vault, he would have won by a lot. But he made a mistake. But he said, well, let's see if I can salvage a medal. I'll just do the best I can in the next two events. And he hit great. Right. He was a tremendous athlete. Sure, these things happen. I know that in 1997, the fellow who won the world championship missed pommel horse in that event. But the rest of his events were good enough that he wound up being the world all-around champion, even though he had a major error on a performance. So you have to be strong enough so that should something like that happen to you in a meet, that you can say, all right, that event's done. I've got the rest to do. Right. You can't let it bug you.
But you know, before you screwed up, when you're walking up, you're doing a floor routine, the pressure of knowing that you can't screw up once. Does that weigh on you? So you don't get another chance.
I think by the time you're a seasoned performer, that's just kind of by the wayside. We know that as a fact. And that's why when you train, if you make mistakes in training, you try to cover up also so you can prove to yourself that you can recover. Now, you can't recover from a fall, obviously. That's a point off the routine away. But if you have some variations in your performance, mm-hmm. you have to get to the point where you say, "All right, so I'm off a little bit, but I can adjust," and then you're back in the swing of things. Right. However, I think that by the time that you are a competent performer, you will walk up to an apparatus and you raise your hand to the judge, and that means I'm going to show you a good routine. You're not going there and saying, "I hope I get through this, judge."
Yeah.
So it's the confidence. I know that I felt that when I was in my peak, I just walk up and said, "All right, you're going to enjoy this one."
Let me show you something. Yeah. So how good does it feel to stick a landing? That seems to be like, every sport has its thing. You know, judo has a big throw, and I feel like sticking a landing perfectly is this beautiful moment.
Oh, for sure, because that's the thing that's most easily seen by the crowd. Right. Many of the people in the crowd don't know the rules of gymnastics. And, well, they know if you break form, if your legs bend and it looks ugly, then it shouldn't be done. But everybody sees the stick. And we reward the stick because we know that's the exclamation point of the routine.
Points-wise, is it a good thing? Do you get many negative points?
Internationally, no. But in the NCAA, if you stick a hard landing, we give you a bonus tenth. So we emphasize that. And that's to help train you for the national program. Because when you get to the national program, competition is stiff. You don't want to give away anything on landings. So if you're good at sticking landings, you know you're going to do a little bit better than somebody who's not good at sticking landings.
At the 2013 Nationals, the PNG Gymnastic Championships, I saw a guy competing in knee brace, recovering from ACL surgery. Basically, seems like gymnasts are crazy, but are injuries frequent in the sport?
Well, they're not so frequent that it would keep you away from doing it. Certainly, injuries are part of sport, no matter what sport you're in.
But you are flipping through the air.
we know that we put our bodies in positions that normal people don't get, but we try to make it as safe as possible. Even when you're learning how to do your very first flip, you're manipulated through it, so you get the feeling of it. And certainly, very few people are strong enough to do the skill right away. They have to be helped through the skill, and their muscles taught what to do, so their muscles respond. And that starts from the very first handspring on the floor. People have crashed on a handspring on the floor, right, too, because they don't know what to do and they haven't taught their muscles what. But if you go through a good progression, you minimize the chance of injury. Plus, we have the thick mats. Many other gyms have what's called an in-ground foam pit with blocks of foam in a big pit. It's not a fail-safe. You can still get hurt in that.
It looks so soft and comfy.
It looks like, but if you land on your head or if you land in an arch, you still can put stresses on your spine that'll cause a problem. So there's a way to fall in those things too. If you're in trouble, if you can land on your back or your side and not land straight up and down, then there's very little chance of you getting hurt.
Paul Hamm, I think, retired.
Yes.
After the 2004 performance.
Well, he made the 2008 Olympic team, but he had a broken hand, and then he couldn't train, so he had to withdraw. Right. And unfortunately, his brother also made the team, but then had to withdraw due to injury, which hurt our team tremendously. And then Paul did try to come back for 2012, but he just didn't perform well enough. Even though you watch him work and you say, wow, he's still good, but he just couldn't get it together, so he had to retire.
He mentioned that the years of wear on your body, but it's like any other sport at the Olympic level, judo, anything, it's gonna wear on your body. So mentally, you kind of get tired of the training.
Well, I went through the same thing. I trained till I was 29. I was best when I was between 23 and 25. Let's say that was my peak physicals, and I started getting hurt. But I still wanted to compete internationally, so I kept on training. And then I got hurt again, and then I recovered and got hurt again. So finally, in 1976, which right around when I was 29 years old, I hurt a shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I just finally just looked in a mirror, in essence, and said, you know, the body's not going to hold up. You got to retire. And fortunately, 3 months later, the Temple job opened up.
At the 2013 World Championships, there's a guy, he's 35 years old, Italian guy. I think Alberto Bosnari is his name. He's a pommel horse specialist.
Yeah.
He's been in four Olympics. When do gymnast, male gymnasts peak? So you mentioned 23 was for you. On average...
And they peak in their 20s, I think. There are occasional earlier or later people. There's a fellow from Bulgaria, Jordan Jovchev, who has been in six Olympics. He was a top all-around. He was third all-around in the world in 1999. But as time went on, he chose to perform on fewer events. He was a world champion on rings twice. He was a world floor champion twice. He then medaled in several Olympics beyond that. Mm-hmm. But in the end of his career, which was only recently, he competed in the 2012 Olympics on rings and made ring finals. Mm-hmm. But he missed his dismount. But it's amazing how strong he is. Yeah. But he also learned what he needed to do to maintain that shape. It's not that he learned a lot of new stuff because he was so good, but he learned what he needed to do to perform well. And hey, six Olympics.
Six Olympics.
That's a lot.
So the name of the podcast is Taking On Easy. Can you remember an especially difficult thing you had to overcome in your career as an athlete or coach? Would your current situation be one of the most difficult things?
Well, anytime you're faced with a crisis like we are now, it's a difficult thing. I know that I was not a kinesthetically gifted athlete. There are a number of my teammates who were much better spinning and flipping than I was, and it took me a long time to learn things. But I had the determination to do so, and I wound up in the end beating most of them in competition.
Were there moments when you wanted to quit?
There was never a time I wanted to quit, even when I was hurt, because I still had goals. I still had goals. The only time when I finally did quit, that's when I guess reality crashed in on me and just said, your body's not going to hold up. And then I said, well, it's time to go full-time coaching. And the position opened up, and that was good. As far as the current situation, I'm not going to give up until June 30th. I'm just hoping that I can convince enough people that it's more worthwhile keeping us here than letting us go.
How can people help?
Go to the website templegymnastics.com. Also, you can probably Google search Temple Gymnastics petition and sign the petition. But I think most important, anyone who has an interest in seeing us stay here, I would encourage you to write or email the president of the university, Neil Theobald, or the members of the board of trustees.
And I'll put up the links to all of those.
Yeah, so. Those links are available. Yeah, mm-hmm. You can probably get those links off of our Facebook page, which is Temple University Men's Gymnastics, or templegymnastics.com.
And hashtag save TUMG on Twitter.
That's right. That's right.
For the Twitter folks. Okay. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Quite all right.
I appreciate it.
Quite all right.
It was fun.
You bet. Hope you learned something.